direct debate as a general policy. The general policy of the Gdolim, if you ask them whether it's all right to debate a reform or conservative rabbi, as a shite, as a consistent shite, they are against it. In a way, it's like you're recognizing that their validity by openly and officially having debates with them. So the policy of Derech Klal is not to debate them. There were some exceptions, but even if you don't debate them directly, you can't avoid having to deal with the issues, because their ideology will always be known to some of the people who come to your shiurim, and they'll challenge you with their ideology. Now, so I'll just tell you over certain points that you yourself will choose if you want to use them, or how you want to use them, or come up with your own answers. But I'll tell you over what points, different times I was able to use. One of the bases of the argument of reforming and conservative Judaism, I mean, we're not worried about their basic shittas, Torah, yes, min ha-shamayim, not min ha-shamayim. Of course, you can't argue on that. I mean, either you do accept it or you don't accept it. The problem comes up when they start bringing rayas from your own sources, from our sources, from the Gemara, to back their position. I remember that one of the most common things that was used by conservative and reform rabbis is the Gemara in Bob Metzia, for instance, by the Machlekes Rab Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and the Gemara comes up, Loi Bashamayim Hi. So they say, you see, Loi Bashamayim Hi. We have to sit down and decide what's right and what's wrong. So why do you argue against us that the system is so exact, so closed? I mean, you see that it's flexible. You see that we decide. Rabbi Yeshua decides according to his logic, according to his standards of right and wrong. And all the riots of Rabbi Eliezer, all the miracles that he brings as a proof to his position, aren't good enough, because Loi Bashomaimi, the Torah is given over for human beings to decide. This is just one source that they bring down. Whenever they find a case where Chazal decided on certain occasions to a certain Tane, what the Gemara says in Edios, that Hitir Shemen, you know, that you are allowed to, all of a sudden they decided that oil that was touched by a Gentile is mutter, right? There was a time when Shemen had the same din as Yain, right? That you shouldn't use Gentile Shemen. And at a certain point, the rabbis decided that Shemen you can use. So you see, there is a time when, for certain reasons, it's time to change the halacha. So how can you say that halacha doesn't change? That's the basic argument. So how do you approach it? What do you say against it? Can we actually say that that's the way it is, that halacha never ever changes? I mean, we know that that's not true. Halacha does change, right? Even though we don't like to use the word change, but let's face it, halacha does change, right? I mean, you see in Yume concerning my machroinim, right? That my machroinim today, that we don't have melach sedoimis, right? There is no chi of my machroinim. So you have to say the lom this way. That's not called a change in the halacha. The halacha was only to wash your hands after the meal if there is melach sedoimis. So that's not a change in the halacha. Remember that lomdishe subtleties are okay for you and me, right? But the type of an audience that the chances are you are going to get, they don't hear this lomdische subtlety. So you have to come up with something more solid to present your position. And naturally, the conservative and reform ideology has a natural advantage over us. Simple. They adjusted to what people like, right? So therefore, obviously, their ideology will, by its very definition, will be more appealing than our point of view. Okay, so how do we approach it? What do we say? What do we teach? So I've used different points at different times. I'll tell you over a few of them. Number one, I've used the Parsha two weeks ago, Parshas Koirach. I've used it very often to explain the difference between Orthodoxy, our position, and Reform and Conservative Judaism. Remember Chazal that say, Lo monis mecho Parshas Koirach to the Parsha of Tzitzis. Because Koirach came and put on Taleshet Kulot Cheles on 250 people. And they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they asked, Taleshet Kulot Cheles, Chayeves Betzitzis, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu says yes. So his chilu, they started laughing at him. Ma doch one blue thread, right, is sufficient. So alachas kamo vekamo, according to one gear, say atale shekulot cheles is also sufficient, right? So they started laughing at Moshe Rabbeinu. Another medresh, bayi shekulos forin chayeves b'mezuze optur b'mezuze. Chayeves b'mezuze. Schilo started laughing. Ma, two parshas of the Torah that you put on the entrance is good enough. Bayi shekulos forim malachas kamo vekamo. That was the argument. So now the basic question is the following: does Koirach believe that Moshe is making it up himself or not? Now, if we are going to question that Moshe's reliability, right, kol haTorah kulo just disappears. Because Kol haTorah kulo is based on the fact, like the Rambam explains, that it's not that the Jews heard Kol haTorah kulo. The Jews didn't hear Kol haTorah kulo. The Jews heard the first two Dibrois. True. What happened with the rest? The rest Moshe Rabbeinu told them over. How do they know it's true? How do they know it's true? Says the Rambam. Part of the experience of Har Sinai is that they saw beyond a doubt, and that's the whole nature of prophecy, an experience which leaves no doubt. They saw beyond a doubt that Moshe is a reliable prophet. In other words, it was part of the prophecy of every Jew in Sinai that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Novi. That's the way the Rambam puts it. That's part of the experience of Sinai. Which means that without it, we have no reason to rely on Moshe Rabbeinu. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu is a human being. Like this, we are not relying on Moshe Rabbeinu. We are relying on ourselves, on our experience in Sinai that tells us beyond a doubt that Moshe is the Keli, the recipient of Torah. So once you accept that as the basis of Kol haTorah kulo, of the reliability of Moshe Rabbeinu, how can it be that someone who was there by Sinai should question whether Moshe is reliable or not? How can Korach come into existence? Right? If there can be a Koirach, then Kol haTorah kulo is out. I mean, if somebody who was in Sinai can question it, Allah has come over, come over, we, right? The answer is that Koirach v'adosoi never questioned the reliability of Moshe Rabbeinu. What were they saying? They were saying the following. You know that the way the Meshe Chochmah explains what is the inyan of the tzitzis and the tcheles in the tzitzis. You know, the Gemara says, Tcheles. Tcheles reminds you of the sea, which reminds you of the sky, which reminds you of the Kisei HaKovod, which reminds you of the Ribono Shel Olam, right? Which represents the idea that everything you do in this world should be with a purpose, with the intention, L'Shem Shomayim, even if it's far-fetched, even if it's a connection after a connection after a connection, but you have to have the general direction towards L'Shem Shomayim. Right? The sea, the sky, the Kisei HaKovod, the Ribono Shel Olam, those are many steps, but they lead towards the right purpose. That was the blueness represents. Now, we know that the halacha is that the cheles is not me'akev es halovon. You can have tzitzes without cheles. But tzitzes without lovon, right? That you can't have. Now, The Lovon represents, it's called Mitzvois Hashem Vasisem Oysom. The Lovon represents the mitzvahs. The Tcheles represents the intention. Right? True? So what does the Halokhe, that Atcheles Eino Me'akeves Halovon, what does it come to teach you? That once the Torah was given, the Iker is the action and not the intention, not the spirit of the law, the letter of the law and not the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law, the idea of the intention, L'shem Shomayim, that's very important. But the Iker is the action. As a matter of fact, I added to this, you know what comes right before the Parsha of Tzitzis? Right before the Parsha of Tzitzis comes the Parsha of Mekoshesh. Mekoshesh. And there's a question, Mekoshesh, when it was? And the Gemara says, Mekoshesh L'shem Shomayim Niskave. Right? Mekoshesh only did it, the cutting of the wood, in order that he should be killed here. It was a suicidal act, the ultimate self-sacrifice, to get killed. Why? For Chilul Shabbos, so Jews will take the Shabbos seriously. But the Gemara says that this is why the Mekoshes did it. The question is, was he right or was he wrong? He was wrong. The Maise, he was wrong. Why? Because after the Torah is given, like Reb Chaim Volozhiner says in the first Shar of the Nefesh HaChaim, after the Torah is given, you can't make cheshbonis, right? How, and do averis. Avera lishmo is possible. After the Torah was given, you can't do an avera for the right purpose. In other words, the spirit of the law is secondary to the letter of the law after the Torah was given. Right? That is tzitzis. Tzitzis tells you that the tcheles, no matter how important it is, but that is the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law has to take second place to the lovon. The lovon is called mitzvois Hashem vasisem oisom, the doing of the mitzvahs. Right? This is why Nismecho Parshas Mekoshes, to Parshas Tzitzis, to teach you that Mekoshes is wrong. That even though he did it L'shem Shomayim, he was wrong. Yeah, so good. So then Nefesh HaChaim talks about it. So he says only like the Gemara says by Goyim or Koyde Matan Torah. But after Matan Torah, that doesn't apply. Nefesh HaChaim brings it down that way.
There are other averos, the Shema, the Chazal didn't say were wrong. It was by Yael.
That's where he brings down, yeah.
Why is the Mekoshesh, why is this Aver Lishma wrong and the other Aver Lishmas which are listed there are
so he said, because by her, by Yoel, that's according to the Shit, it's a Goye,
right.
And by Goyim it is Mutar. But by Jews, after Matan Torah, it's also.
By Esther?
By Esther, it wasn't an Aver Lishma. By Esther Oines. It's a different thing. This wasn't an Aver Lishma. Right, by the way, I mean, that was a major argument between Reb Chaim Volozhiner and the Hasidim. Because you know why Reb Chaim Volozhiner wrote it? Neged Hasidim, Neged Hasidim. Specifically, he doesn't mention Hasidim, but he mentions, and there are Jews who say that it's okay to daven after this man because the intention is more important than the letter of the law. That's where he says it, right? They are wrong. After Matan Torah, there is no such a thing, and as Zman Tfile has to be Zman Tfile. And the Hasidim say, that even after Matan Torah, there is such an union of Avero Lishmo, and this is why you're allowed to daven late, because Kavon is more important than Tfil itself. This was a major argument. But of course,
they hold that you're allowed to...
There are some Hasidim who hold that Kavon is more important than Zman. Right? There are some Hasidim, up to this day.
There in the Bible, I think Imre Emes and others, at least in Polish Hasidim, put an end to that... phenomenon,
I think,
that
he's
no longer
in the Gea. You mean by the Gera, yeah. By the Gera, yeah. But there are some of them, but there's the Satmar, the Pope, you know, a lot of Hungarian Hasidis up to this day. Up to this day, you come, you know, the Dammich in the middle of the night. That's not unusual. It's, because they believe, I mean, it's a whole shit. I mean, it's not, you know, it's a whole shit. But in general, that's what the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, right? That's the limud of Tzitzis. Now, what does Koyrach say? Korach says like this, if the intention is right, how important can be the action? Right? The whole purpose of the blue is L'shem Shomayim, so what about if you have the intention through Tale Shekulot Cheles? Doesn't your logic tell you that Tale Shekulot Cheles fulfills the purpose of the law, more than the law itself. Pure logic. So now the question is like this. After all, we see the whole development of the parshas. Baloischo, the Jews reject the man, right? Shlach, the Jews reject Eretz Israel, right? Little by little, there is a tremendous gap that develops between Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael. Tremendous gap. This is why you have right there in Parshas Baloischo, the first nevuah, Moshe Mes, Yeshua Machnis, Moshe Rabbeinu can't bring us into Eretz Israel. It's too far, the gap is too wide. Okay? So now, we, says Korach, are at a different level. Moshe Rabbeinu at his level, whatever he understood, he understood. We are in a different level. It's a new world. In this new world, we have to adjust to our intelligence, to our minds. In other words, we have to decide to make decisions of what's right and what's wrong. The applications of the laws of the Torah have to be according to what we think is right and wrong. In other words, our seichel, our intelligence, our judgment has to be used to decide when to apply the laws of the Torah and when not to apply the laws of the Torah. In different words, you know what Korach is stating?
First Reform Rabbi.
Exactly, the Reform Movement. That's exactly what the Reform Movement claims. The Reform Movement claims that let's accept all the laws. We just have to know when to apply them and when not to apply them. There are times to apply them, there are times not to apply them. That is something that we should use our judgment for. You can't rely on Moshe Rabbeinu to tell us what to do according to our level. We are at a new level. We live now in Germany in the 19th century. How can you say that a judgment that was valid 3,500 years ago is valid today? The laws are the laws, but the applications of the laws, that's ours, right? It's Koyrach's argument, 100%. In other words, Koyrach represents the beginning of all the reform movements throughout history. The Tzedukim, they all said. The Tzedukim also said the same way. We accept, but we have to make decisions what applies and what doesn't apply, how to interpret a statement, how not to interpret a statement.
Was Koyrach originally a Koyfer, like the Rebbe told us by Zafka about the Tzedukim, was the Perisher Mishnayis of the Rambam that said they weren't, it wasn't that they really felt fit to redo it? No? Oh, sorry, that was from somebody else. Somebody else goes that Perish HaMishnayis by the Tzedukim. It's not that they were, that they originally cut from. They realized nobody's gonna accept it. They said, you know, they made first a Shinui, and they went more and more and more and more. Was Karach really L'shem Shemayim, or was he just saying this to eventually get everybody off?
You mean, did he do it L'shem Shemayim or not? I mean, that depends how you understand it. One thing is for sure, that is in many Mefarshim, it says, the 250 for sure were L'shem Shemayim. Mm-hmm. This is why their pachim, their kelim that they used became kodosh, because their kavone was 100% pure, right? But they were wrong, L'shem Shemayim.
If kavone doesn't matter, then how do we ever use their kelim after? Why does it become kelim that were moved to Shlava?
You're right, good. But the thing is, because of their... of course it was like a hoiroh from Minashomayim, but the reason why there was such a hoiroh is because that the Ribbono Shel Olam took in consideration the purity of their machshoveh, right? They died lifnei Hashem. It's mentioned already in Chazal that they died like Nodav Aviyu. Right? And Nodav Aviyu, it says that like that they became too close. That they came too close and they weren't ready for that closeness. That was the problem with 250.
That's good. I don't understand the point. On what basis does Korach say that it's a new time now?
He said because the point is, I mean, the Maaseh, the even Ezra says it. Why all of a sudden does Korach rebel now, right? After all the stories, he should have rebelled right after Har Sinai when the Levim are appointed. Why did he wait till now? So he says, because in the beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu was respected by everybody. Little by little, a gap was developed between Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael. And at this point, he felt that Moshe Rabbeinu is no shaches with us anymore. Now is the time to rebel. Right.
Since Moshe Rabbeinu went chutz l'machane after the Meraglim.
Again?
Moshe Rabbeinu went chutz l'machane.
Right. I mean,
saying, I'm not part of you anymore.
Right. Lemaisa, you're right. Lemaisa, there was a gap. There's no question about it. There was a gap. Right. The gap existed. Right. This is why... Moshe already by the Meraglim, it was Gipaskin, he can't bring the Jews into Eretz Israel. If he's not a manhig anymore, there has to be somebody else who brings the Jews into Eretz Yisrael, right? Vegambi sanaf Hashem means Parshas Dvorim. Everybody thinks that the decision of in the Torah, it's only by the Hakoah Satzur, by the hitting of the rock. That was 40 years later that it was decided that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't bring the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. Parker, in the Torah it says not like that. In the Torah it says in Parshas Dvorim, Gambi sanaf Hashem biglalchem. Right after the Meraglim, it was clear that Moshe Rabbeinu can't bring the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. The question was only, will Hashem accept the tefillah of Klal Yisrael and change his mind, so to speak? But the decision was already then, because the gap was too wide already. So that is Be'etzem, the decision, the position of Korach. The position of Korach is, he's not denying that Moshe Rabbeinu is reliable as far as the facts are concerned. But the application of the facts to the real world should be decided by real people in this world, by us, by Korachs. Okay, this is the position of Korach. But it's, yeah. But it's, let me just conclude. It's interesting. Which is the parsha that comes right after Korach? Chukas. Which means Chukas is the answer to Korach's taina. Chukas is that even after, right, the gap, right, once the Torah gives you laws, you can't use your own seichel to decide what I can accept and what I can reject. Even laws that don't make sense to us, we have to accept. That is the counter-argument of Korach. Korach! Chukas. Chukas tells you, Zoish Chukas HaTor, even if you don't understand, Ein Lecho Rishus Lehar Erach HaReo. Okay?
What was that Mishnah today, where people are so modern and feel like, taking away my intellect, taking away my right to choose, to decide, to think, to be independent?
You're right, and even on, the whole idea of Chukim is difficult to accept. Yeah. Right? The whole idea of Chukim. But
flying a 3,500-year-old law, I'm going to tell this to people who are, modern professionals. They want to think. I can fly. I can think.
Right.
How do I make them accept
this? Right. It's interesting. I spoke about this in Parshas Chukas. You know that Rashi does something in Parshas Chukas doesn't do anywhere else. That he goes through 21 psukim, and he explains it. And then he goes back to the beginning and he explains it all over again with a completely new shita. Did you pay attention, Parshas Chukas? And it's more. The second sheet is a direct contradiction to the first sheet. Why? Why did he do it, right? But, in the first sheet he says like this. Zois chukas ha-Torah, right? He says, Zois chukas ha-Torah. Because the goyim keep bothering you and asking you questions, what kind of a silly law is this? So you should know it's a chok. You have to accept it. Okay? And then he goes through every detail to tell you just what the details are, but not the reasons behind it. This is how he goes through 21 psukim. And then he goes back to posuk into the beginning, and he says, Umedresh Agode, you know why we bring up Poro Adumo? Because Poro is the mother of the Egel, right? The Poro is the cow, the Egel is the heifer. The same way that a little child makes the palace dirty, who cleans it up? The mother. So the Poro Adumo is here in order to rectify the sin of the Egel. Adumo, why does it have to be red? Well, because sin is always represented symbolically with the color red, right? Temimo, because the Jews were Temimim before the Egel. And it goes on to explain to you beautifully each detail of the Poro Adumo. Do you hear the unbelievable contradiction in Rashi? In the beginning it tells you there are no reasons, and Lechorishus Leharachareo, forget it. And right after he tells you all that, he goes all the way back and tells you a beautiful reason for the whole Poro Adumo. Was it pshat? Because what Rashi is doing is following Naseh V'Nishma. What does it mean, Naseh V'Nishma? Naseh doesn't mean we will do, obviously, because before you do, you have to hear, otherwise how do you know what to do, right? So Naseh already includes I will hear and do. So what is the Nishma? Right? Nishma can't mean I will hear, but because I already heard before I did. What does the Nishma mean? I will understand, right? Lishmoya means to understand. What does it mean? That first I will accept even though I don't understand. My acceptance is not conditional to my understanding. But once I have accepted, I will ask every single detail. I won't let you get away with anything. I'll keep asking kashis. Why this? Why that? Why something else? Except that the reason will never be the basis for my decision making. But I will constantly be searching for reasons. Do you hear the approach? The approach is that we are completely open to questions, and we always want to know why. We have every right to ask why, but we have no right to base our decisions, our acceptance, on our understanding of what's right and what's wrong. That's the Naseh, and that's the Nishma. This is what Rashi does with Por Adumo. In the beginning, Rashi is telling you the Naseh Tzad. The Naseh Tzad of Por Adumo, and Por Adumo represents more than anything else the Naseh, right? Because we don't understand it. Accept it even though you don't understand it. Ein lecha reshus lehara achareo. Ah, you have accepted it already. Oh, let's go all the way back. Every single detail makes sense. Somebody gave a moshul. I may have told you this moshul. A beautiful moshul to use. Reasons for mitzvahs are called tameya mitzvahs. Right? Tameya mitzvahs. And tam is a second meaning. Taste. What is the parallel between a taste of food and the reason for a mitzvah? So I saw in a sefer a beautiful insight. He says it's exactly the same. Why? Because, for instance, an apple. Why is an apple good for you? Because it tastes good. No, because it has these vitamins and these minerals. So why does it have the taste? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam, in his great kindness, made it palatable to us. Right? So he added something that should be palatable to us. So the taste is not part of the essence of the fruit. The taste is something added in order to make it easier to digest, right? But what about if a person will be such a fool that he will take pills which taste, they will take candies that taste like apples, and this is how he's going to try to survive? So they'll laugh at him. The taste is not the essence, the taste is just something added to the essence. Just the opposite. What about if you have an apple without taste? You still should eat it. It's difficult, but you should still eat it. The same thing is with the reasons for mitzvahs. Reasons to mitzvahs, tameya mitzvahs, were added by the Ribbono Shel Olam in order to make it easier for us to digest the mitzvahs. But anyone would be a fool to base your decision on the tameya mitzvahs. Because when there is a contradiction between the tameya mitzvahs and the letter of the mitzvahs, of course the letter of the mitzvahs takes priority, not the tameya mitzvahs. Okay? But according to Koyrach, the Tameya mitzvahs were the Iker, right? According to Koyrach, let's say you are stuck without food on Shabbos. So we'll say, of course, cook in order that you should enjoy the Shabbos. Why should you have a terrible Shabbos, a miserable Shabbos without food? Right? It goes against the spirit of the law of Shabbos. Why shouldn't you drive to Shul? In Shul, you are going to have a spirit of Shabbos. So you'll transgress for 5 minutes, you'll take the car and go to the door. So isn't it worth it for the spirit of Shabbos to transgress the law of Shabbos? So we say no, no. You can't make decisions based on the Tameya mitzvahs, right? To decide whether you should do it or you shouldn't do it. The same way that you shouldn't make decisions on the taste of food, whether the food is good for you or not. Okay? This is the idea behind it. Now, another point which I use, again in the Meforshim in Birkei Yovel, yeah, you want to say?
Yeah, I just want more clarification because superficially it seems like you mentioned that by religious also you can see this type of seeming to take a law and say it doesn't apply to us exactly now. And therefore change it. It also seems to be the same type of thing. Many times, many laws are there. For instance, working for, the whole machlok is the Rambam, and with the other showing about whether or not you're allowed to take money for your learning as a parnasa. So they come out eis lasos. Isn't that also like, the type of, it doesn't apply to us anymore, we can't do it anymore.
You're right, it is similar, you see, but there is an enormous difference. Again, this is not the type of a difference that you can explain to them, right? The approach, remember what I tell you, not everything can you say over, right? There are certain things that you have to keep to yourself, right? Such a thing like this, you're mentioning the Shach concerning not working today, staying in the koilel today. For someone who is not nafshi choshkev, if you're nafshi choshkev, you don't need any heterim, right? You know, even the Rambam, The Rambam himself says, right, in Lo Yecheshevet Levi Bilvai, remember we spoke about it, every Jew who wants to commit himself to learning, he doesn't have to go to work. But we are talking about somebody who is not at that level. Right? Nowadays, he has the right to sit and learn. Why? Because, like the Shach says, if he won't sit and learn, then Nishtakho Toiro Misroel Chas V'Sholem. You know, what will be Toiro Matiyol there? So, Eis Laso Eis Lashem Eferet Terasecho, and therefore, nowadays, because of our flaws, because of our problems, we have a right to do it. Right? So, now, the truth of the matter is, that it says in the Meforshim that we only say that by Torah. Eis Laso Eis Lashem is only concerning something which has to do with how to learn Torah. We only find it by learning Torah. Right? Like Eis Laso Eis Lashem, you're allowed to write down Torah in order not to forget it. Meaning, it all has to do with Torah. By mitzvahs, we don't say Eis Laso Eis Lashem. Right? There is such a thing as, for instance, Hoiro Asho. Right? But again, I would never advise to go into it. I mean, if you tell somebody that, you know, that Anovi, right, is allowed to be mevatel a mitzvah, right, for 100 years, right, he won't hear it. I mean, so that means that you're a Reformed Jew. I mean, so why can't we, you know, if like, do the rabbis have the right to say that you're allowed to drive on Shabbos to shul? There are many shittas that say that yesh koya bad chachomim lakor domem min haTorah bekum ve'asei. You know, it's a shaila. But there are chachomim that say yesh koya bad chachomim lakor min haTorah bekum ve'asei. Theoretically, chas v'sholom, it should never be said over. But if there would be a Sanhedrin today, right, and they would decide that it's worthwhile for all Jews to drive to shul, they would have the power to do it. I mean, it's a shocking thing. But the lemaise, according to the shita that yesh koya bel chachomim afilo bekum ve'asei, you would be allowed to drive to shul on Shabbos. Right, but the chas v'shalom, you're not allowed to say it over because
not the conservatives notice.
So you know the problem is there is one advantage. The great majority, Bor Hashem, are tremendous amiratzim. tremendous, tremendous. Let me tell you something. The great majority of conservative and reform rabbis are complete amiratzim. Complete amiratzim. It's incredible how much they don't know. Right? So, and that's tremendously lucky because chas v'sholem, if you would meet one of them who knows, you're in big, big trouble because then you have to come on to very subtle differences. I mean, I'm not telling you chas v'sholem that they are right. I'm just telling you that then you need subtleties that for the public they couldn't hear.
Am I incorrect that there's a trend now to try to validate themselves with Shaza tunes and maybe this will in the near future be more available to the public?
But who? By the reform? I mean, it's not now. I mean, they had the... I've seen a Shalosh Tshuva Sefer by them. I mean, it's in a way, you see, it's people without judgment, but there were some of them, right, who were very knowledgeable.
The first door, a certain Hashkafa people were.
Could be, anyway.
They were, I mean, thrushes they make on, right, on revelation, verbal versus non-verbal revelation, they quote a thousand chazals and rishonim and afrenim, and they know it all. I mean,
right. It's very dangerous, right. That's what I'm saying. It's very, very dangerous because if you present both cases to an audience, yodeinu ala tachtoino, because the subtleties that we are training, the subtleties, I don't know if we don't even realize how after being in a yeshiva for a few years, we hear subtleties as dvorim pshutim that the hamoin am won't even begin to hear, right? So we hear it. Of course, this achilok. You know, how can you compare? They don't hear it, and if they don't hear it, then you can bring a lot of precedents from the Gemara that will put us in a very, very difficult position to explain to the public. So Baruch Hashem, they don't know. So for instance, you can just say over the basic concept, and that's it, you know, that there is no such a thing. We never change anything, right? You mean by somebody who knows?
Koshe
me'oid.
Koshe me'oid.
Right? Fine. So the point is, you know, every single case you try to answer, right?
You don't really satisfy people that way because you're just pushing them away and then they'll come back the next day with the same problem because they see it themselves that the religious Jews have situations where they seem to change.
Yeah.
It's not going to satisfy them. It pushed them away, but they're going to see it over and it's going to be continually bothering them.
Right. Like, give me an example. What, like, for instance, the reason why I'm asking for an example is because every single case can be answered separately. Like, every single case you will be able to answer separately.
Let's say a case, let's say, and Tosus says that nowadays we can learn it's all in the Gemara.
Yeah.
Well, we can all learn Gemara.
So you see that as a change in the halacha. Right.
Is that a change?
But even according to them, it has to be a development based on what? On a certain need. Like, for instance, there is a change in the halacha that today we are allowed to drive to shul on Shabbos because people live far away. That's not the same. We are just saying that shlish means love dafke, right? And therefore, if you learn Babli and there is a little bit of this and a little bit of this, it's good enough. Meaning, we are just interpreting the word shlish. Instead of saying that shlish means exact third, we mean that partially this and partially that and partially something else.
So you know, they can say that's all we're doing. We're interpreting the Torah.
Right, but it's not. What we are saying is we are just saying the word shlish doesn't mean exact third, which is understandable.
But it does.
No, I mean.
What?
I mean, you can hear both ways. I mean, the Rambam, for instance, does say shlish mamish, right? But you can hear that it doesn't mean shlish mamish. You can hear both ways. So why would you say that it's a development of halacha?
But the conservative can say, but we can hear also right. What we're saying.
Not necessarily. All right. Yeah.
I was explaining to somebody that the difference is, I said, Lo b'shamayim, that unquestionably Torah was given with Torah Shebaal Peh, which Torah Shebaal Peh wasn't. Now, Torah Shebaal Peh is a system that is a development of halacha. And that's the beauty of Torah, that it's applicable to every generation. That the same Torah that's been 3,000 years ago could address itself to, you know, to microwaves and heart transplants and anything that might come up in the modern world, because there is a system of halacha. But the system was given as part of Torah. And that system has been passed on from generation to generation. And you see developments, you see changes. It's all done within the system. And what they're doing is that they decide that they want to create their own system. Which doesn't have a tradition. They branched off and said, well, we're going to make our own system.
They'll claim that they're part of the system.
Why?
They don't claim
not necessarily. You see, why?
The reforms don't claim that they're talking to. That Svara is good if you're not talking to a theoretician. If you're talking to a Stam conservative rabbinical group, for instance, that they would have a hard time getting out of it. If you talk to a theoretician, they would show you how, and they'll quote you Rishonim to show how they are mamash within the system. It's not like the Reform troopers are insane. They quote Gemaras and do the funniest things with them. It's actually an amusing literature to read. Conservative stuff isn't so amusing. It's a little...
Also, I mean, very wild. I mean, still wild.
I'm talking the original stuff. So it depends who you're talking to.
There is no question about it. Let me just comment on this, that the MS is, right, that we have the methodology of how to derive things from Torah, right? If we would have a Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin would has a right to change, right? The Sanhedrin has a right to change, even if the original Sanhedrin that decided some things is good. They can keep changing. Say, no, to our minds, that doesn't apply. Right? As long as we follow the methodology of Torah, that there is no question about it. Yeah.
Another one of the big issues is the Gemara in Achas Osvachim. Hashem shall measure Bani Bera each day until you reach
Rabbi Akiva. Right. So he says, how come you didn't give the Torah to Rabbi Akiva? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Right.
So they bring a proof from that, the conservatives, that there's things that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. So
that you can be Mechadesh.
Yeah.
That you can be Mechadesh. By the way, you know, the Marsho just adds a few words right over there. He says that he was shown what Rabbi Akiva is going to say before Moshe Rabbeinu came to that point in Torah. In other words, right afterwards, Moshe Rabbeinu came to that point and he knew it anyway. But it's not that Rabbi Akiva is going to learn. That's how the Marshal learns. Not everybody learns that way. But the truth of the matter is that once you have the methodology of Torah, of the researcher concept, as the Ribbono Shel Olam saying, Nitzchuni Bonai, which means that we have a right, according to our principles, to make a decision, right? And then even though theoretically it may not be what Hashem meant in Sinai, that becomes Emes, right? We have that right. Exactly, only with the methodology of Torah, with the Begiyut Gimel Midrash, the Torah Nidreshes. But once we use it honestly and correctly, we may come up with decisions that do not fit the original decision, right? So Ichaya such a thing.
Well, we have to show that we have the methodology and conservative and reform do not have the methodology.
That's very important. In other words, this point should be brought out. That
so
we
how can
follow,
I show that? How do I prove, you know, I say that I have the methodology and the next guy will say he has the methodology.
It's not the point. The point is that they don't even claim that they have a methodology. That is the absolute MS. They claim what's right for this generation. That's not a methodology. Right? Methodology means a system, right, within Torah that tells you how to use the principles of Torah to derive new laws. Right? How to derive laws from principles that were given to you in the Torah. Reform will tell you that we will decide when the law applies and when the law doesn't apply. That's a different. That's not a method.
Half of them are atheists.
What?
Half of them are atheists.
By reform, yeah. Inachinam. Yeah.
Can we emphasize the cohesiveness? Yeah.
In a dogma. Yeah. In terms of. What do you mean? Like. The fact that what? That we have been consistent? I mean, that's the whole point. Their whole point is, no, we have changed ourselves.
That's what I'm saying, that we emphasize our consistency and our continuity and the cohesiveness based on the lemaisa versus the intent.
Well, that's for sure. That's in other words, we stress the letter of the law over the spirit of the law. That is a very important principle, that for us the letter of the law takes precedence over the spirit of the law.
I mean, the ramifications of that in terms of their sheep, I mean,
what do you mean the ramifications? I mean, those are the ramifications. In other words, the moment we take the letter of the law as being the principal basis for decision making, then we can't use their methods. Here it applies because it makes sense. There it doesn't apply because it doesn't make sense. We can't say it because the letter of the law takes priority.
But you have the certain things where they'll say, well, we're not doing it here. They'll point back to a guy who wrote this to a rebbe 100 or 200 years ago, did the same thing that they want to do. There was a rebbe in Paris when civil divorces first came about that said that he didn't require any other get. That was from. Right? And what about the thing with what about the Afginura, the petition? Right? Where Tyson says, "Good, now we can get rid of all the mamzeres." He has a whole shakotai, how yes and how not. But, Gemara said we can be mafgia petition.
Right? That's right.
How do you answer something like that? Where they say we're keeping within they'll claim no, I'm keeping within the letter of the law. And
that we have a tremendous difficulty. Like that, the example that you bring, the problem of agunis. Right, the problem of women that are left without husbands, right? They have a way of resolving it that they claim is 100% consistent with our own sources, right? And the Gedolim just almost unanimously rejected it, right? They just say, make a tnai b'kedushin, make a condition in the kedushin that if the husband runs away or is imprisoned or whatever it is, the Rabbonon, right, have a right to be mafkia the kedushin lemafreya, and then the woman is not married, and you avoid hundreds and thousands of terrible human problems. What?
Koran tried to do that in the case.
Koran, I don't remember, but this is the famous concept of the conservative get. The conservative, in other words, the kedushin, the conditional kedushin. And the Gdoilim almost unanimously came out against it, right? Why? Again, to explain it to an audience, it's extremely, extremely difficult. But there is a way. I'll tell you right now.
Can you explain that these women have to suffer because there'll be social breakdown, and you know, some guy
pretty soon people will start, you know, oh, we'll make it tonight. If after a year, this is like, you know, I get to an argument.
You suggest that within a modern audience, you'll have an explosion.
Not necessarily. Let me tell you something. Lemaise is absolutely right, and that is the approach. The approach is that you have to give the audience to understand. Again, you are going to have a very difficult time, right? There is no easy answer to this, right? But the way to approach it is this way. The point is like this. We know that sometimes people suffer because there is a law, right? So individuals suffer, are sacrificed. The individual feelings of a person are sacrificed because there is a law, right? It happens all the time. Mamzerus. It's very painful. Why should the child suffer? On the other hand, if you all of a sudden will make Mamzerus disappear, right? So a big barrier against adultery will have fallen. Everybody will understand that. And then you, yes, but why should this child suffer? You can hear it, but family, people can understand it. Yeah.
Surely the response to that is, but if we make it out tonight, yeah, you can only be mevatel the mamzerus, you can only be mevatel the yegunus by saying that the maaser never was a maaser of adultery. So what are you doing? You're making tikkun so that people shouldn't commit, because otherwise people be murder heads on their eyes. But it won't be a rise. By the time everything works out,
so what will it do to society? What will it do to society? It will break down. That's all. If you can bring across this concept, that the moment you allow this breach, right, this break, the whole system will fall apart, then you have won your case. That's all you have to do. If you are able to explain it this way, you have won your case. The problem is that people say, no, why can't you just do it in special cases? That you have to be able to say. There are no special cases. Once you start with special cases, then you have the marginal cases, which everybody will say, so why not this case? And then there will be other marginal cases, which everybody will say, so why not this case? And after a while, you say, well, after all, why can't we do it every time somebody commits adultery? Why should somebody be an adulterer? Let's be mevatel the kedushin lemafreya, and then nobody's an adulterer anymore, and everybody can just do whatever he wants. At that point, in the extreme case, everybody will hear it's wrong. Oh, if the extreme is wrong, then you can't even start.
The whole thing is only going to work if it's tucked an incentive not to. And if Mamzerus is tucked an incentive, what happens when society is degenerated to the point where people poshut don't care? They poshut don't care. And in the meantime, you have Nebuch, these Mamzerim floating around, some of them become ballet children, and the whole reason why we're not introducing it tonight is not helping the audience.
Well, as long as there is a group who still cares, that itself is a guy that it's working. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anybody who would try to find a way out. If nobody, you understand? Now, as long as there are people searching for a way out, that means that something is still holding, that adultery is still looked down upon. Otherwise, why would we look for solutions? The fact that we are looking for solutions, that means that the issue is still important. Right?
I can see it in the initial type of condition, but during the Ramzeris, I think the obvious time of back would be, fine, we need an incentive against adultery. We will make the people who engage in adultery into Mamzera. We will make them, the people who actually do the act, we will not let them marry anyone in the Jewish people. And the children? Watch the children suffer.
Right. So, you know, so you took away the barrier against adultery, because one of the fears is, if we have adultery, perhaps the child will be born and he will have to suffer, so let's not do it.
No, we're punishing the people involved. We're saying, you cannot marry a Jew. Don't recognize your marriage. We will not marry you. Finished. We'll excommunicate. In other words, we have lots of unction.
No, yeah.
We have lots of unction. We can knas, we can give skila, we can do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Adultery, in other words, if Misa isn't... doesn't create an inhibition to adultery. I'm not sure that Mamzerim is going to do it. People who are willing to risk death penalties to commit that act, on the chance that someone can prove that their kid's an adulterer and all the riyas, their kid's a Mamzerim, all the riyas that you need and all that.
I'm not sure if you're right, because then you say, well, nobody's watching me, but the child will be born, and then, you know, we will know, and it will get out. I don't know if you're right. I think Mamzerim is a barrier against adultery, and people will hear it as such. People will hear it as such. So, lemaise, you're right. That is the approach. The approach is to recognize that once you start breaking down the whole building will just fall apart.
How do you explain the case like the book Social? You get a nice idea who's married, and doesn't beat her, leaves her, and then you just say he goes out to Derech, or he goes try whatever. But the rabbis finally convince him to give her a get, you know, and they write it out, they send it, she gets it, and they found the, you know, the little okay on top of the yud passes up the whole get. Can't use this argument for
that, can you? No, but there is another argument. I mean, it's similar. You see, even in secular law, lehavdil, there is such a concept. There is such a concept.
Documents have structures.
Exactly. A document. But so why not gemina so it wasn't signed? So what if it, so it forgot to sign it, so that should make the nafgemina? A document is a document. Always it's not a document. Right? So even if...
Someone's
entire life and she can never remarry, and
well, you can take someone's entire fortune away from them for lack of a signature.
The contract wasn't signed. But we forgot. Everybody knows that it was just... But it wasn't signed. This contract is not valid. So it means you take away all my property? Yeah. Hey, people can hear it. People can hear that if there are structures, you have to keep to the structure. Right? I mean, otherwise, meaning the moment you have a system, even in secular law, you can hear that the letter of the law becomes crucial. I always give the example of the speed limit, right? 35 miles an hour. So why was the idea behind it? Safety. Well, there are people at 100 miles an hour who are safer than others at 35. So you come to a judge and you say, listen, I'm a professional race driver. I am safe at 100. They laugh at him. Say, what do you mean? That means that every person will have to be judged according to his skill. A system is a system, right? That you can hear. So why not by us that a system is a system? Right? If that's the system, and the yud is missing, so it's not a get. I mean, memonisha, either there is such a thing as a get or not. If there is, it has to have a structure. If there is a structure, it has to have details. So the details, as minute as they are, but they are details. If the screw is missing, the whole machine won't work. That they can hear, even in the secular world, they can hear that. Okay? There's another concept that I want to give over. You know that by us, it's interesting. I once read that one of the main arguments in the beginning of the Reform movement was not to whether to say or not to say Bameh Madlikin Friday night. You know, by the Ashkenazim, we say Bameh Madlikin Friday evening. And they decided to take away the Bameh Madlikin. Right? It's a silly thing to say Friday night, and therefore let's take it out. And the Gdoile Yisrael fought like lions not to take out the Bameh Madlikin. Right? It's not. Almost at the same time, yeshivas, something else was happening. They, in order to shorten the morning davening, you hear? They got rid of the korbonis, not more and not less. Right? All the Mishnayos of Ezeum Mekoimon Shel Zvochim, the Ktoires, they just took it out and they said, well, listen, after all, we are learners. We don't need to say this. I mean, after all, who know, you know, korbonis, we've been learned, but bekame, why should we say korbonis, right? So let's dub much faster. Right? Nobody said a word. Everything was accepted. So we don't say korbonis. Big deal. What's the difference? What's the difference? Simple. The intention, that's the difference. The intention of, it's not that whether you do say Bameh Madlikin or you don't say Bameh Madlikin, is why you are taking out the Bameh Madlikin. You know why they are taking out the Bameh Madlikin? To break with the tradition. In the yeshivas, not to say korbonis was just for practical reasons. We were really in a rush because davening in yeshivas takes long, and the extra, why should we, you know, the extra 20 minutes? There are so many things that we have to learn. There was no rebellion in this act. Like when somebody asks, you know, that the women of the wall, that they used to come every month, and halachically, is it correct what they are doing or it's not correct what you are doing? Don't deal with the issue. You don't have to deal with the issue. You say, but is the intention to break with the tradition or isn't it to break with the tradition? Can you blame me for saying that their intention is just to break with the tradition? Can you blame me for saying that? So why can you, how can you blame me for being against it? Forget about the details in Halokhe. Can you say that there is anything wrong for women to open a Sefer Torah and reading inside? So they can bring you enough proof to show you that there is no issur whatsoever. So therefore it's right. If the act is an act of rebellion against the tradition, that itself is a negative act and we should be against it. Okay? So this is what I mean, that intention is crucial, right? Like the Bameh Madlikin. You have to know why they are doing it. So really there is another insight here. Sometimes, again, depending on the circumstances, on the audience, you can admit that changes have happened in Judaism. Changes have happened, right? But no one ever decided to make the changes in order to make life easier, in order to adjust to public opinion. No rabbinical court decided to change in order to adjust. Sometimes changes happen by themselves. Once changes happened by themselves, we said, okay, we'll accept it, it's nothing wrong. Like, for instance, there was a time that Provisora Salanter decided, you know, people are wearing short coats. Okay, it's not beged goy, it's not the bechukois alois aleichu. It's okay to wear short coats. Is it changing the aloche? A generation before Provisora Salanter, a frumme Jew wouldn't be caught with a short jacket. Why change? What changed all of a sudden? Professor Santa realized that at this point it's not a beged goy anymore, because Jewish people are using it. So it's true, the ones who did it in the beginning were definitely wrong, because they broke away from the tradition. But it came to a point that the change happened and we recognized it. There's a tremendous... I know, this is why I introduced it by telling you that with certain audiences you can even go as far as saying over what I just told you over. That sometimes we will accept a change that is already in existence in order not to break away with Klal Yisrael, but we won't introduce a change just to make life easier. That doesn't exist by us. In order to make Judaism more popular, we will accept a change? No way. That's not a criteria.
How do you explain the context of that? Well, I think it goes in Zerush and it's with Lam Lamubos.
Good, the truth of the matter is by Gzeiros de Rabbonon, right? That was a major criteria. Will it be accepted or not? Not only that, even after they passed it, until it became widespread, it wasn't a valid takone, right? It could be generations later. They said, it wasn't accepted, let's forget it.
That's one God, so we don't have to deal with that. A superior intelligence above us, so we can't take into account things like... human emotions, or covet of rios, or things like that?
Well, there are situations that, yes, an individual, but in general, I mean, lemaise, there are situations that we say, well, mishum covet of rios, this is mutar, but this is an individual case, but we won't actually pasken, you know, make a zero based on that. Based on that, there is one more nekuda that I want to bring out. You know, that they bring an apparent contradiction. The first mission in Pirkei Avos says, Hemidu Talmidim Harbe, right? The three things that Anshei Knesset HaGdolah says, right? Hemidu Talmidim Harbe, Vasusio, what is the first one?
He delivered
himself. What? Hevum Isunim Badin, Vemidu Talmidim Harbe, Vasusio Glator. Hemidu Talmidim Harbe, you know, they ask the question. Anshei Knesset HaGdolah give you big advice. Hemidu Talmidim Harbe. What's the big chidush? Of course. I mean, what were they mechadesh? By telling you, Hemidu Talmidim Harbe. So the Meforshim say, before the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the stress wasn't on Harbe. The stress was on individuals, quality, not quantity. They came back from Goles, and then Torah wasn't so popular, so then became the stress now is quantity. You can't stress quality. People are not running to yeshivas anymore, right? When people were running to yeshivas, you can say, wait a second, you have to be of a certain standard for me to accept you in yeshiva. If nobody wants to come to the yeshiva, so you try to get quantity, right? Hemidu Talmidim Harbe, right? Hevum Mesunim Badin. Hevum Mesunim Badin means take it easy, don't be so strict, have patience, right? As a matter of fact, in one of the Meforshim, I mean, it says in the Midrash like this, Lomo Nismecho Parshas Mizbeach, right? To Parshas Mishpotim, Elea Mishpotim Asher Tosim Lifneihem. Remember, the last pasuk in Parshas Yisroi is, you shouldn't go up Bemalois Al Mizbechi. Don't go up with steps to the Mizbeach. And right afterwards it says, Elea Mishpotim Asher Tosim Lifneihem. Lomo Nismechu, to teach you, Shetiyu Mesunim Badin. The din should be like a ramp, not like stairs. So people try to understand, what is the difference between a ramp and stairs? If the metsunim, patient, take it easy, right? Doesn't it sound more like steps than like a ramp? Don't we say step by step? So, in Lemaise it says the exact opposite. That teaches you that you should have a ramp and not steps. The symbolism is wrong. It should be punktvakel. You should have steps on the Mizbeach to represent Mesunim, step by step. So, it says in the Meforshim, what is the difference between a ramp and a staircase? A staircase that I build, let's say I build steps of 10 centimeters. So you, in order to go up my steps, you better take 10 centimeter steps. If you take a 9 centimeter step or an 11 centimeter step, you'll break your head. Which means that I force you to take the steps according to my standards. What is a ramp? In a ramp, I allow you to take the steps according to your standards, your strength, your quality, your capacity, right? And that is the story of Rabbi Sora Salanta. Rabbi Sora Salanta, it says, once went to a completely non-frume city. Did you ever hear the story? And there were businessmen who had to work on Shabbos because that's how you make a living. And he decided he's going to make him Shomer Shabbos. And he came and started saying shiurim for them. And little by little he started telling them the chidu between Dinei Derabbonon and Dinei Deoraisa. And he started telling them, you know what, you work on Shabbos, fine. But don't transgress biblical laws. Transgress rabbinical laws. Instead of writing, tell the goy to write, right? Instead of carrying the keys, carry it klachariyad. You know, do only the rabbonos. And then he went on to say, you know, instead of transgressing to the rabbonos, you know, say it in a way that you should be only one the rabbonon. And little by little, after a few years, he changed the whole community. Okay, that is hevu misunim badin. Okay, how does that fit with the concept asusio glatero? A sociogladiator is the exact opposite. Make the Torah more difficult. More fences, more fences, more fences. Isn't there a contradiction between Haibum Mesunim Badin and a sociogladiator? So I found them in the force and they say, no, not at all. You see, the Torah, you can't compromise with the Torah. Don't tamper with the Torah. Just the opposite. The Torah has to be strengthened. The weaker the generation is, you have to make more fences. Right? What about individuals who want to come close to Torah? Do you compromise with them? Not with Torah, with them. Oh, as much as you can. Do you tell them right away, stop working on Shabbos? No, chas v'sholem, that you are losing them. You are going to lose them. Personally, you are allowed to take it step by step and you make compromises with them. And even, I've heard it once from Adon Odom Godel, even though you're not allowed to tell him to drive on Shabbos, but if he asks you, should I drive on Shabbos to shul or should I go to the beach? You should tell him, going to the beach is worse. You hear? You can't tell him, better drive to shul, because those words are not allowed to come out of your mouth, but you are definitely mechuyev to tell him, going to your golf club is worse. That you can tell him. In other words, what are you telling him? To drive to shul. So what are we? Reform rabbis that we tell people to drive to shul, just the opposite. We are being mekayim hevu mesunim badin. Individually, we'll work with the people step by step, right? But as far as Torah, we would tamper with the Torah law and say that the law is that you're allowed to drive to shul. Chas v'sholem, just the opposite, right? That is the difference between Reform and Conservative Judaism and Lehavdil, what we believe in. We believe that Torah you don't tamper with. Torah is Torah and you make fences around it. Individuals, oh, as much as possible. Make it easier for them, make it more attractive to them individually, but not as a shite. Therefore, it's no contradiction. Asusio glat Torah, that's as far as Torah is concerned. Hevum mesunim badin, that's concerning the human being. Okay? All right, step in.